Imagine for a second
Yeah.
The absolute highest stakes you can possibly conceive of.
Right.
I mean, I'm not talking about a high-pressure job interview
Yeah.
or, you know, a final exam at university where your GPA is on the line.
Sure.
I am talking about a situation where the information literally stored in your brain right now, in this exact second, determines whether another human being lives to see tomorrow or dies right in front of you.
It is a really heavy thought. I mean, most of us go through our entire careers without ever having to make a decision that carries that kind of weight.
Exactly.
But for anyone working in emergency medical services or EMS, that isn't some hypothetical scenario. It's just, you know, Tuesday.
Tuesday morning,
Yeah.
it's the job. But here is the kicker, and this is what we are really exploring in today's deep dive.
Yeah.
Before you can ever get out there to that ambulance, before you can push that medication or actually save that life,
Yeah.
you have to get past a gatekeeper.
Oh, yeah.
A gatekeeper that is notorious, feared, and frankly, kind of a beast.
You are definitely talking about the National Registry of Emergency Medical Technicians Exam,
Yep.
the NREMT, or as it is affectionately known in the industry, just the registry.
The registry. To the uninitiated, it sounds like paperwork.
Right.
But to an EMT student, it sounds like an absolute nightmare. And that is exactly what we are digging into today. We've got a really fascinating stack of sources to work through for you.
You do.
We are looking at comprehensive tutoring materials, clinical study guides, and website content from EMT Paramedic Tutor and Munden Interactive.
And what is totally unique about this stack is that it's all centered around the methodology of one guy, Forrest Munden.
Right.
And I think it is important we establish exactly who he is right off the bat, because in the medical field, authority is everything. You don't want to learn heart surgery from a
Yeah.
guy who just watched a couple of YouTube
Oh,
videos.
absolutely not. In a field like this, you want someone who has been there, done that, and, you know, got the t-shirt. So, who is Munden? Is he some academic, a professor in an ivory tower?
Better. He is actually in the trenches. Munden is a full-time firefighter paramedic down in Southern California with 21 years of service.
Wow, 21 years. That is a long time in any job, but in EMS.
That is a lifetime. I mean, the burnout rate in this industry is incredibly high.
Yeah.
Dealing with trauma, the long shifts, sleep deprivation, it really grinds people down. So for someone to be active on the streets for 21 years means he has literally seen everything.
Incredible.
Plus, he's the author of EMS Notes, What You Need to Know, and he has built this massive reputation as a private tutor who helps students nationwide,
Right.
from total rookies just entering the field to people who have failed the exam multiple times and are on the verge of just giving up.
And that kind of experience is crucial because today we actually have a two-part mission for this deep dive.
Yes.
First, we need to understand the strategy. How do you actually study for a high-stakes medical exam using Munden's philosophy?
Right, the methodology.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And second, and this is the part I am really fascinated by, we are going to do a deep dive within a deep dive.
Yeah, we aren't just going to talk about how to study in the abstract.
No.
We are going to apply Munden's method to a specific deadly medical emergency found right in his study guides, which is left-sided heart failure.
It is the perfect test case. It's complex, it's highly dangerous, and as we will see, if you just try to memorize facts about it, you might actually make a fatal mistake out in the field.
Spot on. It is the difference between knowing the definition of a word and knowing how to write a poem.
No, I like that.
One is just data, the other is application.
So let's start with the hurdle itself, the NREMT exam. Why is everyone so terrified of this thing? I mean, a test is a test, right? You study, you fill in the bubbles, you get your score.
Well, actually, no. And this is where most people get tripped up. The NREMT isn't a standard linear test where you have a set number of questions, say 100 questions, and you need to get 70% right to pass.
Okay.
It uses something called adaptive CTAT, or computer adaptive testing.
Okay, let's unpack that for a second. Adaptive caddy. It sounds high tech, but how does it actually change the experience for you, the student sitting in that chair?
So imagine you were playing a video game.
Okay.
If you defeat the first level easily, the game immediately skips you to a much harder level. But if you struggle, it keeps you on the same level or drops you down slightly to see if you can even handle the basics.
Wow.
The test is literally interacting with you.
This is dynamic. It's watching me.
It is designed to find your breaking point. The algorithm mirrors the real NREMT. It gives you anywhere between 70 and 150 questions.
Okay.
And here is where it gets super interesting. The exam only stops when it knows your competency level. It is judging you in real time.
That is incredibly stressful. So if I am sitting there taking it and the test just abruptly shuts off at 70 questions?
You either did really well or really, really badly.
Oh, man.
Precisely. It either determined, you know, this person is safe and competent or this person is dangerous very quickly. And it is ruthless. If the algorithm detects you are weak in a specific domain, say cardiology or trauma, it starts weighting that domain heavier. It essentially attacks your weaknesses.
That is diabolical.
Yeah.
It's like a video game boss that learns your fighting style.
Exactly.
So if I'm shaky on airway management, the computer knows and says, oh, you didn't like that. Here are five more just like it.
And it will not let up until you prove you actually understand the concept.
Yeah.
That is why Munden's approach is so intensely focused on the six domains.
Which are?
You have to master all of them. Airway, cardiology, trauma, medical, OBGYN and pediatrics, and EMS operations.
Okay.
You can't hide your weak spots from the algorithm. You can't just hope you don't get asked about childbirth, because if you miss one question on it, the computer will just hammer you on it.
And looking at the source material, particularly those testimonials, this seems to be where students just crash and burn.
Yeah.
They try to memorize their way through. They treat it like a vocabulary test or some late night flashcard session.
Right. There is a review in the stack from a student named Marcus T. from Ohio. He failed the NRMT twice.
Twice?
He was probably doing what so many students do, memorizing lists of symptoms, lists of drugs, trying to just brute force the information into his brain. He said, I failed before finding this tutor. After two phone sessions, I passed.
Two sessions. That is a massive turnaround. What was the core difference?
He said, Munden breaks complex topics into clear, memorable concepts. And that is the key philosophy here. Concept over memorization.
Right.
It's not about picking A, B, C, or D just because you memorize the answer key. It is about understanding the why behind the answer so you can apply it to a scenario you have literally never seen before.
There's actually a great example of this in the Munden interactive materials.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sample question that perfectly highlights this difference between memorizing and truly understanding.
Oh, yeah. Let's hear it.
Can I read it to you?
Go for it. This is a perfect example of what we call a critical thinking question.
Okay. Here's the scenario. A 28-year-old female presents with wheezing, hives, facial swelling, and a blood pressure of 78 over 40 after eating shellfish. She has a history of anaphylaxis.
Yeah.
What is the first line treatment?
Stop right there. This is a classic trap.
Why? I mean, it seems really straightforward to me. She ate shellfish. She has hives. She has a history. It's an allergic reaction.
Right. So a student who just memorizes anaphylaxis equals EpiPen might actually get this right by accident.
Okay.
But they might stumble if the options are more nuanced. Or, crucially, they might choose an antihistamine like Benadryl because they see the words hives and facial swelling.
That makes sense, yeah.
But look at the numbers you just gave me.
Blood pressure of 78 over 40.
That is critically low. Normal is around 120 over 80. She is hypotensive.
Wow.
She isn't just having a simple allergic reaction. She is in decompensated anaphylactic shock. Her vessels are dilating so much that she isn't perfusing her brain or her organs. She is dying right now.
So the question isn't just, what is this disease?
Mm-hmm.
The real question is, what do you do first when the patient is crashing?
Exactly. And that distinction requires you to understand the pathophysiology. You need to know that epinephrine doesn't just stop the allergic reaction.
What else does it do?
It heavily constricts the blood vessels to bring that blood pressure back up. Benadryl will not do that.
What?
If you give Benadryl first, she might literally die while you are waiting for it to work. That is the concept over memorization philosophy in action. You have to treat the physiology, not just the label on the disease.
That makes total sense. It is really about triage in your brain, identifying the thing that will kill them fastest.
Precisely. And that brings us perfectly to our clinical deep dive. We want to show you exactly what this looks like in practice with a much more complex condition.
Yes.
So we pulled a specific PDF study guide from the source material titled Left-Sided Heart Failure.
This sounds intense. Why this topic specifically? Out of everything in EMS.
Because this is a massive topic in the field. It is the most common type of heart failure presentation you will actually see on the street.
Really?
And the stats in the guide are sobering. In-hospital mortality is up to 10 to 20% for acute cases if they go untreated or are treated poorly.
10 to 20%. So this isn't a, you know, load them up and drive casually to the hospital kind of situation.
No, absolutely not. The guide calls it flash pulmonary edema. It can happen incredibly fast, and it can kill fast. It explicitly notes scene time matters.
Scene time matters.
You have to treat what is fixable immediately. You make your money in the first 10 minutes on these calls.
Okay, so let's use Munden's method here. Let's look at the concept before we look at the drugs.
Yep.
Munden uses a really distinct analogy to explain what is actually happening inside the body. He says to imagine a weak pump trying to push water through a hose.
It is a simple but really brilliant visual. Let's break down the anatomy for just a second. The heart has two sides. The left ventricle is the main powerhouse. Its job is to take blood that has just come from the lungs, fresh with oxygen, and pump it out to the rest of the body.
So in the analogy, the left ventricle is the pump and the body's arteries are the hose.
Correct. Now imagine that pump is weak. Maybe the patient had a heart attack 5 years ago that killed off some muscle tissue. Maybe they have had high blood pressure for decades and the heart is just tired.
Okay.
The pump pushes, but it just cannot move the fluid forward fast enough.
So if the pump can't push, the water or the blood has to go somewhere. It backs up.
Physics dictates it has to back up. And where is behind the left ventricle? Where does the blood come from?
The lungs.
Exactly. So to use Munden's phrase from the guide, the garden gets flooded.
The garden.
The garden is your lungs. The pressure builds up in the blood vessels of the lungs until it literally forces fluid out of the veins and into the alveoli.
Now, the alveoli are those tiny air sacs where oxygen exchange happens.
Mm. Right. They are supposed to be filled with air, but in this condition, they fill with fluid. This is pulmonary edema.
So the patient is literally drowning.
Yes. They are drowning in their own blood plasma. It is a terrifying way to die and a really terrifying thing to witness.
So let's talk about recognizing this patient. Because if you are a new paramedic, you walk into a house at 2 a.m., grandma is in severe distress. How do you know it is this specific problem and not, say, pneumonia or a regular asthma attack?
The study guide gives us the sensory details to look for. First, you listen to the lungs. You will hear bilateral crackles or rails.
What does that sound like?
It sounds like Velcro being pulled apart or bubbles blowing in milk. It sounds wet. It starts at the very bottom of the lungs and works its way up as they fill with fluid.
Okay, but the guide also mentions it can sometimes sound like wheezing. That seems a bit confusing.
Yes. They call that cardiac asthma. That is a huge trap for the rookie.
Why is it a trap?
Because if you hear wheezing, you might just think asthma attack or COPD and decide to give a bronchodilator like albuterol.
Okay, makes sense.
But albuterol speeds up the heart rate. If you give that to a heart failure patient whose heart is already failing, you are whipping a tired horse. You might make the failing heart work even harder and make the patient drastically worse.
Wow. So you have to look at the whole picture. You can't just rely on one single sound. What else are we looking for?
The guide points out a classic visual sign, pink frothy sputum.
Pink frothy sputum. That is such a vivid, nasty image.
It is undeniable. It's blood-tinged fluid literally bubbling up out of the mouth. If you see that, they're in deep, deep trouble. So look at their positioning. The guide mentions orthopnea.
That means they can't lie flat, right?
They will fight you if you try to lay them down. Think about a water bottle that is half full.
Okay.
If you stand it up, the water is at the bottom. If you lay it on its side, the water spreads out everywhere.
Oh, I see.
If you lay this patient flat, the fluid spreads across their entire lung surface area and they suffocate instantly. They need to sit bolt upright.
And they might mention something called PND.
Paroxysmal nocturnal dyspnea.
That's a mouthful.
It is a fancy medical term for a really scary story. They went to bed feeling fine, but woke up 2 hours later gasping for air, running to the open window to breathe. That is a huge red flag for heart failure.
Okay, so we have a patient who is drowning. They can't lie flat. Maybe they are coughing up pink foam. Their oxygen saturation is probably really low.
Often less than 90%. They will be breathing fast tachypnea, and their heart will be racing tachycardia.
Yeah.
They are absolutely terrified. The guide lists anxiety and diaphoresis, which is a heavy cold sweat, as key signs.
Okay, so we have identified the patient. We know the concept. The pump is broken. The garden is flooded. Here is where it gets really interesting. And I think this is the actual aha moment of this entire deep dive.
I completely agree. This is the critical thinking part that Munden stresses so heavily. This is what separates a truly good medic from a dangerous one.
The guide breaks down left-sided heart failure into three different presentations based entirely on blood pressure.
Yes.
And it says, correct me if I'm wrong, that treating them all exactly the same can be fatal.
That is the single most important takeaway from this document. Not all heart failure is created equal. The treatment depends entirely on the blood pressure. You have hypertensive, normotensive, and hypotensive.
Let's break those down. The guide says hypertensive is the most common.
Right. This is your acute flash pulmonary edema. The systolic blood pressure, that top number, is often over 140, 160, sometimes even over 200.
Whoa, 200. Why is it so high if the heart is failing? I thought a failing pump would mean low pressure.
That is the counterintuitive part. Think back to the pump and the hose analogy. If you put your thumb over the end of the hose, the pressure spikes, right?
Right.
In this case, the patient's arteries are clamped down tightly. That is high afterload, the resistance the heart has to pump against.
Okay.
The heart is weak, but it is trying to push against a literal brick wall. So the pressure skyrockets, the heart fails even faster because it's working so hard and fluid backs up much quicker.
So for these patients, the high blood pressure is actually the enemy.
Exactly. It is the root cause of the failure in that moment, and they respond very well to treatment that lowers that pressure. We will get to that in a second.
Okay, presentation number two, normotensive.
Systolic between 100 and 140. The fluid is backing up, yes, but it isn't being driven by that extreme high pressure clamping down.
Right.
The guide has a specific caution here. Treat carefully, don't drop pressure too fast. If you treat them exactly like the hypertensive patient, you might bottom them out and cause a stroke or cardiac arrest. You have to be gentle.
And that leads us to the third one. The really scary one, hypotensive.
Cardiogenic shock. Systolic blood pressure is less than 90. They have signs of poor perfusion, cool, clammy skin, altered mental status. They look like death.
So the pump has failed completely at this point. It can't even generate pressure anymore.
Correct. It is sheer pump failure with low output. And the guide has a critical warning right here in bold text. It says, avoid aggressive vasodilators.
So if you give the standard heart failure drugs to this specific patient,
you will kill them. You will take a pressure of 80 and turn it into a pressure of 40, and then the game is over. You have to support perfusion first.
This is wild. So you walk in, you see the pink sputum, you hear the crackles. You know for a fact it is heart failure.
Yeah.
But if you don't check the blood pressure, you don't know the mission.
Precisely. You cannot treat based on the sputum alone. You have to treat the hemodynamics. This is why Munden emphasizes concept.
Yeah.
If you just memorized heart failure equals pink sputum equals give this pill, you are operating blindly.
So let's talk solutions then. What is the treatment? The guide references 2026 EMS protocols. What are we actually doing for these people out there?
The gold standard mentioned is CPAP, continuous positive airway pressure.
That's the tight mask that gets strapped to their face, right? It looks sort of like a fighter pilot mask.
Yes. You start at 5 centimeters of water pressure and titrate up to 10, but you really need to understand why it works. It isn't just blowing oxygen at them.
Right, because if the lungs are full of water, oxygen can't get to the blood anyway.
Exactly. CPAP uses air pressure to physically force the fluid out of the alveoli and back into the capillaries. It literally pushes the water out of the garden.
That is incredible.
It also forces the chest open, which decreases the preload, the amount of blood dumping back into the heart. It gives the heart a much needed break. It is a miracle therapy for these patients.
I have heard medics say that CPAP frequently prevents intubation.
It absolutely does. It saves them from having a tube shoved down their throat and being put on a ventilator.
Okay, so CPAP is on. What about meds? The guide calls nitroglycerin king.
For the hypertensive presentation, the one with the super high pressure nitro is absolutely king. It is a vasodilator.
Yeah, a vasodilator. It opens the vessels.
It opens up the veins and the arteries. Remember the thumb on the hose?
Yeah.
Nitro takes the thumb off. It drops the afterload. Suddenly, the weak heart doesn't have to push against a brick wall anymore. It can pump effectively, and the fluid stops backing up. It is really elegant.
But, and here is the big warning that really surprised me. What about Lasix? I feel like I always hear about Lasix, you know, the water pill for heart failure.
This is a major shift in modern protocols, and Munden definitely highlights it. The guide explicitly says Lasix, or furosemide, is not first line in acute flash edema pre-hospital anymore.
Really? Why? If they are drowning, don't we want them to pee the fluid out?
Logically, yes. But physiologically, it takes 20 to 30 minutes for Lasix to actually make you pee.
And you don't have 30 minutes.
You don't. Furthermore, in the first 5 minutes, Lasix can actually cause vasodilation. If you haven't stabilized the patient, or if you misjudged and they are actually dehydrated but just happen to have fluid in the lungs, Lasix can be incredibly dangerous.
Oh.
The guide says, use only if clear volume overload AND your protocol allows. It is not the easy button anymore.
That is really good to know. And for that hypotensive patient, the one in shock, we aren't giving nitro, right?
Absolutely not. No nitro. The guide says, small fluid boluses, if no overload, consider pressors like norepinephrine.
Pressors, meaning that constricts the vessels.
Exactly. You have to squeeze the tank to keep the brain and the heart fed. It is the exact opposite of the hypertensive treatment.
And finally, the guide mentions something that seems pretty obvious but might get missed in all the chaos. The 12-lead ECG.
Always. You have to grant a 12-lead early because you have to ask yourself, why did this heart fail today?
Right.
Did they just eat too much salt at dinner? Or is the patient having a massive STEMI heart attack right now? If they are, you are treating the failure, but you also need to treat the clot.
It is really about being a detective, isn't it?
It is. And this brings us right back to Munden's core philosophy. If you just memorize heart failure equals nitro and Lasix, you would be dangerous.
Yeah.
You might kill the hypotensive patient. You might rely on Lasix when you should be rushing to set up the CPAP machine.
It is entirely about the underlying concept.
It is. The test, the NRMT, is fundamentally designed to weed out the people who only have surface-level knowledge. It adapts to find your ignorance.
Right.
And the reality of the street is even harsher. The patient's physiology is the ultimate adaptive test.
Yeah, that's a really powerful way to put it. The patient is an adaptive test.
They are. The patient doesn't read the textbook. They don't present exactly like the flashcard. And the only way to pass that test is to understand the actual mechanics, to know that a weak pump needs very different help depending on whether the pressure is high or low.
It is truly fascinating stuff. It takes the anxiety of the BEAST exam and turns it into a genuine challenge of competence. It is not about tricking you. It is about making sure you are ready for the real thing.
Exactly. You study deep so you can act fast.
Well, that brings us to the end of this deep dive. We have gone from the algorithm of the NRMT to the fluid dynamics of the lungs. It really underscores why this job is so demanding, but also so deeply rewarding when you get it right.
Quite a journey. And honestly, kudos to everyone out there studying for this. It is a massive mountain to climb. But the view from the top, being able to actually help people, is entirely worth it.
I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over. We talked about how the NRMT exam adapts to you and how a patient's condition adapts and changes under your care.
Yeah.
But think about this. In a world where algorithms are getting smarter every day, both the testing kind and the medical diagnostic kind, what is the one thing they cannot replace?
That's a great question.
It is that instinct, that uniquely human ability to walk into a chaotic room, hear a subtle sound, see a patient's posture, and connect it to a physiological concept instantly.
The human element.
The human element. Keep learning, keep diving deep, and we will see you on the next one.